You're in tune to WPFW Washington. Good morning. Next up, very shortly, we will have What's at Stake with your host today, Fahima Sek, followed by Dr. Ife Williams with Wake Up and Stay Woke, and David Whetstone with We the People. We hope you keep it locked right here on WPFW as you move through your day, and you are in tune to WPFW in Washington.
From New York, this is
We Spend the Hour with Dr. Yanka Lagoke, Associate Professor of Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University. We'll be unpacking the Pan-African Congress, the 9th Pan-African Congress, that is, in Togo, and all things Africa. Good morning and welcome. I'm Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake, streaming at www.wpfwfm.org. And for those of you on terrestrial radio, it is 89.3 on your FM dial. And we want to encourage you to please honor your pledge, because we can't do it without you. Dr. Lagoke, welcome back to WPFW.
Hi, Fahima. Good morning. The volume on your side seems to be low.
Yes,
I don't know if you can speak a little bit louder.
We're both going to have to speak up because we're having a little technical difficulties, but that's the nature of radio. So you're the convener of the 9th Pan-African Congress that's going to be taking place in Togo, Africa. And we're going to talk about that in the second part of the show. But I want you to unpack for those in the listening audience what is happening on the continent. We do recall that last year there were a number of things going on in the Sahel. Can you talk about some of the things that have been happening in the Francophone countries to start out?
Okay. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Africa is experiencing a renaissance. There is an awakening on the continent of Africa, and particularly in Francophone Africa. Yes, we know that Julius Malema from South Africa launched the Economic Freedom Fighters in order to put emphasis on the economic freedom of Africa. We recently witnessed a popular uprising in Kenya, where the youth and then an intergenerational movement, they took to the street in order to oppose an IMF ill-inspired fiscal reform that was going to increase, the difficulties and the challenges of the population. But in Africa, in Francophone Africa, for the last 20 years or so, we've seen a people power movement almost everywhere, in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, in Ivory Coast, and then in Senegal. In Senegal, over there, there was a leader called Macky Sall, the former president of Senegal, who was in power, and he wanted to change the constitution in order to extend his term, to extend his power in Senegal. People organized, and then that people power movement was led by a political party called PASTEF, which claimed Pan-Africanism, and whose leader is Ousmane Sonko. And then the government tried to suppress his party, tried to oppress his people. There were a lot of rallies, and then many of them, there were like more than 60 people killed. And Ousmane Sonko and many other leaders, including the current president, were put in prison. He was prevented from running. And then his party chose the Secretary General of the party, who was freed along with Ousmane Sonko 2 weeks before the election that took place on April the 24th, 2024. And then PASTEF, that claimed Pan-Africanism took power. It was like a big earthquake, like in the Francophone world. That is the latest development. But before that, we saw that the officers in Mali, Niger, and Burkina, because they were not happy with the way the respected leaders were fighting against terrorism that is hurting people in the region. Some People's Power Movement led some officers to take power in Mali, in Niger, and in Burkina Faso. And the leaders of those countries, Assimi Goïta in Mali, Tchiani in Niger, and Ibrahim Traoré in Burkina Faso, because of the sanctions that ECOWAS activated and manipulated by France put on those countries, they decided, you know, to leave ECOWAS, which is the community of West African countries, states, and then they created the alliance of the Sahel states. And then they became, last month, they announced that, you know, they have turned the alliance into a confederation. And then as the France is trying by all means to maintain its hegemony and its influence in Francophone Africa, these developments that I just spoke about are major when we know the French neocolonial system put into place in order to defeat every spirit of self-determination in Francophone Africa.
Well, I wanted to ask, because there have been some concerns with the president of Senegal and also with troops on the ground from Kenya and Haiti. I want you to talk, because I understand that the newly elected president of Senegal, which everyone was very happy about, has joined ECOWAS. Can you unpack that and tell us what that's really about? And also speak a bit about Kenyan forces on the ground in Haiti. That's very troubling to many of us in the past.
Yes, thank you very much, Fahima. And I know we are friends, but when I pay you compliments, you know it's because I really mean it. I love the way you conduct your interviews, and then so I like that a lot. So let me, because there is a piece, there are some elements that I did not talk about in the first answer because I did not want to be too long. But now, when I said that ECOWAS was activated and manipulated by France, ECOWAS wanted to do a war, to go and fight against Mali and particularly against Niger, where the General Tchiani took power after a bloodless coup d'etat. So the ECOWAS, led by Tinubu, Nigerian, the Nigerian president, and then supported by the former Senegalese president, Macky Sall, the current president of Benin, Patrice Talon, the president of Ghana, Nana Akufo-Addo, the president of Ivory Coast, Alassane Dramane Ouattara, they wanted to go and do a coup d'etat, shed blood, in order to bring back to power somebody who was overthrown after a bloodless coup d'etat. It was an uproar, many in Africa and in the world, with the support of African Americans, even some whites who care about freedom and justice in the world, they oppose that way of doing of ECOWAS. So, but there were some leaders. The president of Togo was not in favor of a military operation in Niger, and then some other ones. So he was one who mediated between the leaders of Mali, Burkina, and Niger, and the, you know, traditional leaders of ECOWAS. But now that Bassirou Diomaye Faye, who is the current president of Senegal, came to power, in the last meeting that was organized by ECOWAS, they appointed him as the mediator, with the support of the Togolese president, to try and bring back to ECOWAS the descendants, those who have decided to leave ECOWAS, who are the presidents of Mali, Niger, and Burkina. So that is the situation that is happening now. And many did not like the fact that the Senegalese leader wants to try and solve the issue. I do not agree with them because I've been telling Africans I've been talking to that there is a war between Ukraine and Russia. And then there are some doors of communication between Ukraine and Russia. And there are some doors of communication between the United States of America that is supporting Ukraine and Russia. So taking the initiative to mediate between the cell states and then ECOWAS, I think it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because we need to continue to have those conversations in order to resolve our issues. Now, talking about Kenya, yes, I as a Pan-Africanist, I oppose that mission that the William Ruto, the Kenyan president, decided in order to conduct or to put at the disposal of a mission more than 2,000 police officers of Kenya. For us, it is the same scheme. The neo-colonialists, they want to try and put Haiti under occupation. So it's this time, in the age of social media, somehow they don't know how to do it. And then, of course, they have to find some black faces. And Kenya is one of those faces with the support of so many countries like in the Caribbean. So, and then let's see what will happen in Kenya. But definitely, this is not what people need to do. In Haiti, the stakes are clear. The majority of the population is being exploited by some who control the economic and political life, manipulated by foreign forces. So if people want to listen to the plight and to the desires of the people and try to meet many of the needs, which are about what? Healthcare, free education, and then higher wages. So these are the issues that people want to see resolved, not a military operation activated by the United States, Canada, and France, and that Kenya is supposed to be conducting. So this is my position on that.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 on your FM dial, streaming at www.wpfwfm.org. I'm Fahima Sek. The show is What's at Stake, and today my guest is Dr. Yanka Lagoki, Associate Professor of Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University and the convener of the Ninth Pan-African Congress, which we're going to talk about in the second part of our show. Now, I want you to talk about BRICS, if you will. Now, I just want to say that BRICS was originally an intergovernmental organization that was comprised of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But since that organization is now comprised of, yes, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, and the United Arab Emirates. What are the implications?
Yeah, this is a major shift in the history of the world. As we know, the BRICS were created more than 15 years ago as a supra institution to counter the hegemony of the institution of Bretton Woods, led by the United States and the West. So for at least for 70 years, many countries in the world, namely the African countries, they did not have what are called the power of choice. So they had, the only possibility that they had is to go with the IMF or to go through the IMF. And then this was going to be a difficult moment for many African countries. The IMF, as you know, when they try to help you, they give you a loan, they will come with the conditionalities. And the conditionalities evolve according to the interest. And then this is what Kenya is experiencing now. And the same thing may happen to many other African countries in the 21st century as it did happen in the past. Now, with the existence of the BRICS, the first major thing is what I call the power of choice. It means that some countries today, they are not condemned, you know, to go to the IMF or the World Bank to try and secure loans. They have the possibility to go and knock at the door of the BRICS. The BRICS, I think they have the name of the BRICS Bank is the International Development Bank. So this is one thing. The second thing is that the BRICS, they're trying to counter the hegemony of the West. Then, of course, they come with a different way of doing business. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. But what I want to say is this. It looks like, based on what we are hearing, that the BRICS countries want to somehow counter the European hegemony, but they are not proposing something that is different from what the Europeans are doing. And it is very important what I'm going to say. Yes, we welcome the existence of the BRICS. They're trying to do things a little bit differently. There are some projects here and there they're doing. But when it comes to the nature of the political, the economic model, we don't see the BRICS working to decolonize the international development structure. And then if they want to do that, this is my suggestion. You are talking about Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And now we have some Islam Muslim countries that were taken as members of the BRICS. Instead of promoting neoliberalism, and then instead of extracting the resources of Africa the same way the Europeans are doing, I think China, Russia, and India need to promote some alternative value systems. And then each of the founding members of the BRICS has a humanistic or a value system. In the case of Brazil, President Lula came with the concept of Bolsa Familia in order to support the poor. With that system, Brazil lifted out of poverty more than 25 million people. We're talking about Russia. In Russia, they have a value system over there which is called MIR, M-I-R, which is about humanness, which is about nation, which is about community. And then in India, there is a concept called Satyagraha, which is also about community, which is about hold fast to the truth. That is a concept that Gandhi used in order to articulate his nonviolent strategy when he was fighting against the British, for the decolonization of India. And China, yes, today we know China as a communist nation, which is playing a role in the international development framework. But in China, there is a value system called Confucianism, which is the foundation of the Chinese society. It puts emphasis on community and collectivism. And then, of course, in South Africa, we have the Ubuntu philosophy that I promote as the pillar, the ideological pillar of the new dispensation of Pan-Africanism. So I'm saying that those founding members can say, you know what? We have those value systems that put emphasis on community, collectivism, and humanity, and sharing, compassion, and social, and so on, all those values. But they are not doing that. They are following the model that they said they're going to fight against, but to position themselves as the new power to the detriment of the West, while they have the possibility in order to promote those value systems. In the Muslim world, there's a concept called Ummah, which put emphasis on the notion of what community. So this is what I want to say about the BRICS.
Well, I want to address, before we hit the bottom of the hour, two things. Because there are two things that are rather disconcerting. Well, first, let me start with this. Dr. Ariana Chiemborikwa, who was the past ambassador to the African Union, was raising these concerns, and again, they pushed her out, and she has subsequently started the ADDI, African Development Institute. But also, what is rather disconcerting, there are those who, and I'm sorry, this is how I feel, who've never even been on the continent, who have accused China of trying to recolonize Africa. And that's really insulting, because you're saying that a country is going to recolonize an entire continent. And I understand all of the deals may not be perfect, but I do recall the hospital that was built in Zimbabwe. And I also know that there are some situations with roads and development. And China and many African countries have had a relationship since the Bang Dung Conference. So I'd like you, in whichever order you choose, to talk about the foresight of Dr. Arianna Chiambori Kwar and her hue and cry with respect to France and the Francophone countries, and this allegation that China is trying to recolonize Africa. Can you, in the remaining time we have before we hit the bottom of the hour and do a break?
Okay. In the case of, I did not hear too, like well the portion about Ambassador Arikana. I know you spoke about somebody was who never went to Africa saying that China is recolonizing Africa. Yes, on the conversation about the recolonization of Africa, I can tell you that that's not a discourse I want to, you know, to advocate. I don't speak like that. And then you know that when Africa was fighting for its independence, there were some countries that supported Africa when the West, when the global West was conducting segregation in the United States, colonialism in Africa and some other parts in the Caribbean, and apartheid in South Africa. So China, Russia, and India, Indonesia, they were on the side of Africans who were fighting for freedom. That's why when Mandela came out of prison, one of the countries that he visited was Cuba, and Mandela visited also Russia later on. So, yes. But like I said, I'm not seeing China thinking about recolonizing Africa, after colonizing Africa. I've never met any documents. I've not read any documents about that. But they have their way of doing things. This is what I'm saying. And I think that they can do business a little bit differently. And this is my position. And then, yes, the loans, so many of the deals are not in favor of Africa. Because if you come and you exploit the oil of Africa and you're a Chinese company and then you want to give 17% for the exploitation of oil to an African country, then you are doing the same thing like the Europeans are doing. But unlike the Europeans, China was not there to articulate a theory of colonization of Africa. China did not articulate a theory of enslavement of the African people that the European, like the same thing the Europeans did for the last 500 years. So this is what I want to say about that. Now, for the Ambassador Arikana, if you may repeat what you were saying, if there is something you want me to say particularly about that.
Well, she had been speaking prior to her ouster about how France was continuing to exploit these Francophone countries.
Okay, yeah, yeah, you.
How,
yeah.
And including Haiti, because even though Haiti is not on the continent, it is still part of the diaspora, and there were some issues about having them becoming part of the African Union. But she was very vocal with respect to the exploitation, particularly with the Francophone African countries. And then shortly after that, she was ousted.
Thank you. Yeah, yes.
So many of us were very excited when we saw the rising up in the Sahel. If you could speak a little bit and kind of connect the dots there.
Oh, yeah. I will do that very quickly. Yeah. People like me, you know, we have to be grateful to Ambassador Arikana. And I'm going to say why. Because we've been fighting, we've been fighting against the French neocolonialism for many years. And then we've been talking about that. But when Ambassador Arikana expressed a personal revolt about the state of Africa and about what the French are doing in Africa, and because of a position, because, you know, she's well articulate, and in the United States, and with the support, which is true, and with the support of many Black Americans, a position went viral, and then many people now are discovering, if I can use that expression, the fate of those African Francophone countries because of Ambassador Ali Kana. Yes, so the reality in Africa, is in Francophone Africa, is that when many African countries gained their independence, the Europeans came with different types of schemes, different types of schemes. France, they signed some bilateral ties with each one of the former colonies. This is what France did. And then, okay, so basically each country was to give the preference to France for every commercial deal, for every economic deal, for every developmental deal. They have to give preference to France. If you want to sell your bauxite, okay, France has to take it, or the French companies. This is what they've been doing since the beginning. As I'm going to give an example, in my country, because I don't want to talk, I don't want to generalize, so I talk about things that I know. In my country, the oil, the electricity sector, the water sector, the telecommunications sector, the banking sector, and the insurance sector, and many all of the sectors, the bridge, all of them are businesses in the hands of the French companies. And this pattern can be seen in each one of the countries that the French colonized.
I'm Fahima Sek, and my guest is Associate Professor of History and Pan-African Studies and Chairman of the Scientific Committee of the Pan-African Congress, the 9th Pan-African Congress, which will be taking place in Togo. The show is What's at Stake, and you're listening to WPFW 89.3 on your FM dial, a Pacifica station, streaming at www.wpfwfm.org. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back. And when we come back, Dr. Logoki, I want you to talk about the history of the Pan-African Congress and how we got to the 9th Pan-African Congress and what will be taking place and how people can get involved. And so we'll be back on the other side of this.
Denko, Denko, ye. Here I come, Songola. Denko, Denko, ye. Musa luye, nena kunye, Denko, ye. Here I come, Songola. Cheba kora dunko sonu faka sombe mungere ma. Cheba kon sonne. Cheba manasa domina. Cheba kora dunko sonu famine upe mungere ma. Cheba kon sonne. Denko.
Oh yeah. Shivayi Tan Sundala, 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 Shivayi Tan Sundala.
We open with Django, a West African song that talks about women and how far we will go to be mothers and how important that is in so many cultures of the world. And that then once we have children, the lengths we will go to try to see that the children have a chance to survive. The song was arranged for Sweet Honey in the Rock by Netanju Bolade, commemorating Winnie Mandela, who, as a mother in South Africa, never really got to walk her children to school because she was under house arrest when they were in elementary school. But she is today perceived as the mother of a nation.
And we're back, and that was Sweet Honey in the Rock. And I play that in honor of the Dr. Bernice Johnson Reagan, who recently made her transition amongst the ancestors. And I have to say, the Sweet Honey in the Rock got me through my years at Howard University, and we just want to honor her and pay tribute to her with Danko. Sweet Honey in the Rock, live from Carnegie Hall in the 20th century. We're back. Dr. Lagoki, who is the Associate Professor of Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University and the convener of the 9th Pan-African Congress that will be taking place on the continent. And there's some preparatory events. But before we get into that, can you talk about the history of the Pan-African Congress? I know it's been complex. There have been some times when there were plans to have it and it didn't occur. So could you unpack that for us in the time we have remaining? Dr. Lagoki, are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Can you? Can you?
I heard you.
Yes,
I heard you.
Yes,
okay.
Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, okay. No, I want to, you know, I'm going to seize the opportunity to explain something that, you know, many people do not understand properly when it comes to Pan-Africanism. First of all, I'm not the convener of the 9th Pan-African Congress. I'm the chair of the scientific committee of the 9th Pan-African Congress. And the architect of the 9th Pan-African Congress is the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Togo, His Excellency Professor Robert Dissé. Now, Togo is organizing the 9th Pan-African Congress, so it is called Pan-African Congress. But I would like to share with your listeners the fact that there were different types of Pan-African gatherings which took different names. And then there were some important figures who came and who contributed to advance the cause of Pan-Africanism, and who organized their Pan-African meetings or gatherings, and then they give different labels to those different Pan-African gatherings. So the first one that considered to be the first official Pan-African meeting in 1900 in London, organized by Henry Sylvester Williams, it was called Pan-African Conference. W.B. Du Bois was there. He was the one who organized another series of Pan-African meetings that he called Pan-African Congresses, 1919, 1921, 1923, 1927, 1945. And then the 9th Pan-African Congress that Togo is organizing is in line with the historical continuity of the Pan-African meeting that W.B. Du Bois initiated. Marcus Garvey, who was the founder of UNIA, he put together his meetings, and then he called them conventions. Kwame Nkrumah, who was the leader of Ghana, who was at the 1945 Manchester Congress. When he returned to Ghana, when Ghana became independent, he started a new series of Pan-African gatherings called the All African People Conferences. And then there were three of them, and then the first in Accra, 1958, second in Tunisia, 1960, the third one, 1961, in Cairo, in Egypt. And then when Kwame Nkrumah was overthrown, Pan-Africanism entered the period of hibernation, and then later on in 1974, people organized, and many members of SNCC, the SNCC Non-Violent Coordinating Committee, were involved in that Pan-African Congress in 1974, taking Dar es Salaam. And later on, there is another one they organized in 1994, and then in 2008, there was another one, and groups did not agree with the way the Pan-African Congress was organized. And then there were even two, one in 2014 in South Africa, and another one, a dissenting group, the group that claims to be the sole custodian of the organization of the Pan-African Congresses, they met in Ghana in 2015. And today we talk about the Pan-African Congress. So this is what I wanted to give as a background information. And now, today we see in Africa that, yes, in the beginning of the show we spoke about the People's Power Movement, but at the same time, there is also a revival of Pan-Africanism in some institutions in Africa, particularly the organization, the African Union. When Dr. Zuma became the leader of the African Union Commission, she somehow contributed to bring the African Union in that in the claiming of Pan-Africanism, because before her, they were organizing many things. They were even talking about Pan-Africanism, but many African development programs were not claiming Pan-Africanism the way the Agenda 2063 did under the leadership of Dr. Zuma. So since that time, we saw that many African leaders are competing, somewhat to claim Pan-Africanism or somewhat to claim some issues related to Pan-Africanism. Ghana, for instance, is the champion of the struggle for reparations. And in November 2023, Ghana organized a big conference on reparations. And then there were like hundreds of people there, many from the United States and from different parts of the world. William Ruto from Kenya, who sent his soldiers in Haiti, he organized in 2023 in September a big conference on climate justice. So this is what is happening. So it is in that context, because I don't have to go too far, that Togo decided to organize the 9th Pan-African Congress after advocating for the decades of the African roots and the African diaspora, 2021 to 2031. So this is the context of the 9th Pan-African Congress, and it will take place in Lomé from October 29 to November the 2nd. But before the organization of the big meeting, there were six regional conferences that took place. Southern Africa in South Africa, Northern Africa in Morocco, and then West Africa in Mali, and in East Africa and Central Africa. And now the conference for the diaspora about reparations, reconstruction, restitution, memories, and Pan-Africanism will take place in Salvador de Bahia from August 29 to August 31st. So this is what we need to know about the basic information related to the Pan-African Congress.
Now, people who want to participate, how would they actually get involved? Will it be live stream, because, you know, we're in a virtual world today. I know that the African Union has had a conference recently, and it was available via link for those that weren't able to actually travel. Will there be any virtual streaming, or will there be the possibility of some of the panels and things being made available?
Yeah. So, I did not want to be long on my previous answer, so I just want to give the title of the 9th Pan-African Congress. The theme, the general theme, is Renewal of Pan-Africanism and Africa's Role in the Reform of Multilateral Institutions, Mobilizing Resources and Reinventing Itself for Action. If people want to, you know, first of all, the website of the Pan-African, the 9th Pan-African Congress, the website is pac9-lome2024.com. pac9-lome2024.com. Lome is L-O-M-E. So that is the website. People can go and then register on the website. And then when this is something that we are considering to see how, you know, we can, people who are not in Togo can follow, you know, the debates. At the launching ceremony of the 9th Pan-African Congress, which took place in May 2023, yes, they did that. People could follow the launching ceremony from wherever they were. Thanks, you know, to technology. So we are thinking that that's something we should do for the 9th Pan-African Congress that will take place in Lomé in 3 months.
I know that there is a X page, which is at 9th PAN. And if you just put in X, you do a search, Pan-African Congress, it'll come up. It's at 9th PAC Lomé 2024. Now, is the African Union in any way involved? Will they have a role in this?
Yeah. When I was saying, for instance, that there was a conference of climate justice organized in Kenya, and there was that conference on reparations that Ghana organized in Ghana, and then the 9th Pan-African Congress, all of them are endorsed by the African Union. It's not just Togo is doing something without the support of the African Union. The African Union endorsed the 9th Pan-African Congress, and the 9th Pan-African Congress, it is an activity of the African Union. So for Morocco to host a regional conference in North Africa, for South Africa to organize a Southern African pre-conference in South Africa, it was done in coordination with the African Union Commission, with the African Union. So all of them, they are in the process.
So I'm going to ask, who should participate? I know that there have been a number of events that the African Union has been engaged in, and some of them have been available virtually. But who should participate? I know the event that's coming up next month is for the diaspora, and the focus is going to be on reparations and repair. But who should participate in this upcoming event?
Do you want to talk about Brazil, or you talk about Lomé?
Well, we talk about each. First, the one that's coming up for the diaspora in Brazil first, and then we'll talk about the overall conference that's taking place in Togo. Who should participate in Brazil?
Yeah, so the one in Brazil, which is like a diaspora, which is the sixth region of the African Union. It was decided that it's going to be organized in Brazil. So it is for the diaspora. So there will be a few people from the United States who are going to be there, and then people in the region, Southern America, beside Brazil,
South America and the Caribbean.
That's Southern America. I'm sorry, in South America, and then people who are coming will be coming from Trinidad, Tobago, from from Colombia. So it is for the diaspora. So it's not going to be, it's not like we're going to bring together like 500 people. It's just a pre-conference. So if we have around 200 people or less, that conference is going to propose some resolutions which will be debated or which will be discussed during the Pan-African Congress in Lomé. Now, for the Pan-African Congress
in Lomé, before you move there, because yes. I want people to understand, it's kind of like a preparatory conference, like when we have these conferences, the UN conference, at the UN, you have preparatory conferences for like in preparation. I had the pleasure of attending the UN conference against racism, but they had preparatory conferences in other places, like in Geneva, for example.
Yes, there are, like I said, there are six. And then there are pre or preparatory meetings or preparatory congresses or preparatory conferences. And they will culminate in that big one in Lomé, which is like the moment of the 9th Pan-African Congress. So this is one thing that, you know, you made me stress. Now, as I was talking about who will be in Lomé, we want everyone who cares about Pan-Africanism, the fate and the plight, the future of Africans and people of African descent, people who are organized in civil society or in grassroots organization, people who represent, you know, different departments, university. In universities, journalists. All of them, and some politicians or people who represent different political parties and leaders of countries, all of them are expected to be in Lomé. Of course, it is not going to be easy because we have to take a decision. We have to make a decision, and we cannot bring out 2,000 people in Lomé. We have to make a selection, and then we will be working on that. But the way I do business, I am always driven by a sense of equity, a sense of fairness. And then the people I'm working with in Lomé, they too have at heart the success of the conference. As you know, the Minister of the Foreign Affairs of Togo is the one who is the architect of the project, and then he does not want, you know, he does not want people to say that they were excluded. So we are reaching out to everyone who may want to be in Lomé. But of course, there are some people, for different reasons, who do not want to be in Lomé. We cannot force them. But whomever wants to be in Lomé, that is something that we have to consider. And if it is possible, they should be there.
Whomsoever wills. Whomsoever will. How do they do that? How... Go ahead.
This is what I'm saying. They can, like I said, they can register on the website, or they can contact me, and then because if they go on the website, the email is there. When they go on the section of contact, they can put a message there, and then, you know, we will contact them to make sure that they be in Lomé if they want to be in Lomé. And one thing I want to say, I'm not saying that all the people who are willing to go to Lomé, that there will be that the government of Togo is going to pay for like tickets and accommodation for 5,000 people. This is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if the government of Togo is going to sponsor a number of people, but at the same time there are some people who may also sponsor themselves and be there because it's an opportunity for Africa. To discuss about his future and to discuss about the future of his diaspora. One thing that I know that I can talk about, because I've been doing research on that, it is the 1958 All Africa People's Conference Kwame Nkrumah organized, Ghana organized, under the leadership of Ghana, of Kwame Nkrumah, and George Padmore was the chief architect of that conference. There were several organizations that sponsored the participation of their members. Ghana did not pay for all of them. So that's something people have to know also.
What's the response been like? I know you mentioned that that there will be some sponsorships, which is somewhat unusual, which actually shows the earnest effort. But what has the response been like? Well, now that you said that there's an opportunity for some sponsorships, what has the response been like? And then could you also give the website so people can actually see how they can connect?
The one thing I wanted to say is that, for instance, there was a contest which was issued in the context of the 9th Pan-African Congress towards the youth. They were asked to write some essays about Pan-Africanism on a topic of their choice, and then 20 of them were selected. And so those 20 definitely tickets and then accommodation will be provided for those 20. So then we will see. Same thing, you know, for the adults. It depends on what the significance and the importance of the grassroots groups that want to be in Togo. So this is something that we are going to analyze. We have not started that yet. So the website, like I said again, it is I'm going to say it the way, first of all, it is pac9-lome2024.com. pac9-lome2024.com or pac9-lome2024.com. That is the website. People can go there. If they have any concern, they can go on the section, the contact section, and then they can say, they can suggest or make some references, some proposed people, express what they want about the 9th Pan-African Congress.
Well, we're nearing the end of our program. I'm Fahima Sack. The show is What's at Stake? And I've been in discussion with Dr. Yanke Logoki, who is the Associate Professor of History and Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University. And let me get this right. He's the chairman of the Scientific Committee of the 9th Pan-African Congress, which will be taking place in Lomé, Togo. Give the dates again.
October 29th and the website. November the 2nd.
The website?
2024.
And the website?
The website, pac9-lome2024.com.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Logoki, for joining me today. I also want to give thanks to Katia Stitt, who has been my engineer today. I really appreciate her assistance. I want to give a shout out to Brother Richard, who saw that I got to my destination safely. I want you to stay tuned for Dr. Ife Williams and Stay Woke. Also for Community Watch and Comment. And please remember your pledge. Honor your pledges. Just a program note, Project 2025 has targeted Pacifica Radio. So please, we need you to support WPFW and the Pacifica stations. We can't do this without you. If ever we needed your support, it's now. I'm Fahima Sack, and shout out to our executive producer, Verna Avery Brown.
love are hanging on, we push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what. Are killing hogs, twisted children are killing frogs, poor dumb rednecks rolling logs, tired old ladies kissing dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what. Come on, baby. What it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Half of one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out one nut. God damn it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what. Suck it to me.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Brazilian music is back in its righteous place on WPFW. I'm your host, Roberto, and Berimbau airs on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Are you ready to take a trip from Rio Grande do Sul to Amazon and back? That's Berimbau, Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at